"Miller," I said. He wasn't paying attention anymore. He was demolishing a bag of chips and watching darts on TV like it was the most interesting thing ever. It's not. I kept going anyway. "I'm going to sleep out here tonight," I said, pointing at the other bed. "I'm kind of sick of that bathtub."
"Whatever," Miller said, flicking some salt and vinegar crumbs on the floor. "But I get the remote, and we turn out the lights when I say so."
"Yeah, okay," I said. "I could live with that. No problem." Chapter 51. Brain Strain. The next morning started off like Christmas. It was our last day in London, and when I got on the bus, Jared wasn't on it. I guess they took his whole prank thing pretty seriously. I heard people talking about how he was being held back at the hotel all day. Not only that, but Mrs. Stricker was the one staying with him. So like I said, Merry Christmas to me. Mostly, though, I couldn't stop thinking about Jeannie. We were on our way to visit an English middle school, and I kept trying to figure out how to talk to her on that bus ride. But it was no use. Ever since she broke up with Jared, her friends had been sticking to her like some kind of all-girl security detail. There was no way I'd be busting through that perimeter anytime soon. I've never been the most confident kid this side of the sun. Still, I kept wondering if Jeannie might be thinking about me at least a little bit. I know. That's crazy, right? A complete waste of brain space that I could be using on math or something useful. So then why was I thinking it? Because I couldn't help it, I guess. It was like this giant tug of war, back and forth inside my head. By the time we got to the school, it was like an exact tie, and I still wasn't any closer to knowing what I should do. What I really needed was another one of those signs. Maybe a billboard this time. Something to tell me what to say and when to say it. But in the meantime, the day was just getting started, and my brain was ready for a nap. I couldn't take too much more of this. Something had to give soon. And in fact, I didn't know it yet, but something would. Even sooner than I thought. Chapter 52. The Same But Different. We walked in the door of Beeling Bright Secondary School.
"Please proceed to your host group and get to know one another as we begin our day together," some English guy kept going. "We have a fun morning planned for all."
The first thing they did was divide us into smaller groups and show us all around the school. That part was just okay, to be honest. We'd already taken about 80 tours that week, and I was all toured out. Also, Jeannie wasn't in my group. After that, everyone got buddied up with one of the English students. I got some kid named Abdullah, and I was supposed to follow his schedule and see what a typical day was like for him. It was cool at first, just hanging out at the lockers and meeting some of his friends. I learned some more new words, too. Or at least new ways to use them, like brilliant and wally and quid. There were some others, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say them here. Question: are bad British words still bad when you say them in the United States? I'm not sure, but I'm not taking any chances either. After that, I went to Abdullah's classes with him, starting with history, where the teacher talked for a long time about the causes and consequences of the Industrial Revolution and... See, I can't even tell you about that part without falling asleep. It turns out that the biggest lesson I learned was that English middle school was just as boring as American middle school. But then just before lunch, a bunch of us got to go outside for a while.
"What do you say, guys?" Abdullah asked us. "Up for a little football?"
"Yes," Miller said.
"You know they mean soccer, right?" I said.
"Oh," Miller said. "Then whatever."
But he played anyway.
I'm not exactly a world-class soccer player. I'm not even a Hills Village-class soccer player. But it was all pretty friendly. They didn't even make us line up and get picked, or not picked, one at a time, which was cool. They put Miller in as goalie on my team. I guess that was because he took up more space in the goal than anybody. He definitely looked ready to tackle whatever came his way, and I wondered if he still remembered it wasn't regular football. I got put at left fullback. That meant I was on defense, which was better than being on the front line. Most of those English guys played like they were born with soccer balls attached to their toes. The problem was, I'm not left-footed. So I was always running up to the ball, twisting around, and trying to kick with the outside of my right foot, which looked just about as goofy as it sounds. I'm pretty sure I was giving soccer and America a bad name at the same time. On top of all that, they had another game going on the next field. And that's where I finally spotted Jeannie again. Once I saw her, it was hard to stop looking over there. I could have watched her play soccer all day. But then I realized someone was shouting from much closer by, and they weren't just shouting near me. They were shouting at me. "Wake up, Cachadorian!" It was Miller. And when I looked around, I saw why. The other team's front line was coming our way. They'd just gotten past the midfielders, which left us fullbacks as the last line of defense. I totally should have focused then, but I couldn't help taking one more look at the other field. I wanted to see if Jeannie was watching. And this time she was. In fact, she was looking right at me. That's when she waved, and even smiled, which seemed like a good sign. A very good sign. So, at least she wasn't ignoring me. She probably just had other stuff on her mind that morning, which I could totally understand. Maybe that even meant, "Cachadorian!" Miller yelled again. This time, when I looked back, I had the world's biggest English kid practically on top of me. In fact, he'd just taken a shot. The last thing I saw was that soccer ball coming straight at my face. The good news? I managed to stop the ball from going into the goal. The bad news? I stopped it with my face. To celebrate, I spun around, fell over, and hit the dirt like 100 pounds of dead American weight. Chapter 53. Recovery Room. So imagine getting punched in the nose. Got it? Now imagine if your whole head was just one big nose. That's about what it felt like when that ball hit my face. I didn't pass out or anything. It was more like someone shut down the power station that ran my brain for a few seconds. Everything kind of went blurry, then dark, then back to blurry again. "You okay?" someone said. "Yeah," I said. I was still face down, sniffing the grass, and I didn't feel okay, but it seemed like the right thing to say. "Watch out, lads," some adult called out. Then I felt a hand on my arm. "Not to worry, son. You're all right." I recognized his voice. It was the guy who made all the announcements that morning, Mr. Covington. He was the assistant headmaster, which I think is British for vice principal. "Can you roll over?" he asked me. "I think so," I said. But when I did, it was like suddenly I was the scary movie, and all of them were the audience. I guess that ball turned my nose on like a faucet, and my face looked something like a cheese-free pizza by then. My shirt was all splotchy red, too.
"Oh, my,"
Mr. Covington said. He handed me a handkerchief from his pocket, but without exactly looking at me. I don't think he liked all that blood.
"Let's get him inside, boys," he said,
and a couple of the other guys got me on my feet. Then they all walked me over to Mr. Covington's office and put me in a chair with my head back. Ms. Donatello was there now, too, and she cleaned me up while Mr. Covington kept busy intensely not looking at me. Instead, he got on the PA and made another announcement.
"Attention, ladies and gentlemen. "Our American patient is doing just fine," he said. "We expect a full recovery in no time."
I could hear some people clapping down the hall then, which was cool. Seriously, these were like the nicest kids I'd ever met. I was starting to think maybe I should move to England and go to school here instead of going back to HVMS.
"How about some ice?" Ms. D said.
"Sure," I said, except it sounded like, "Sure," because of all the toilet paper in my nose.
"I'll go with you," Mr. Covington said. "We'll see about finding Rafe another shirt."
That was okay with me. Mr. C was making me nervous anyway. So I just stayed there, kept my head back, and waited for my face to stop aching. I wasn't alone for long. A second later, I heard the door open, and I thought, that was quick. But when I looked up, it wasn't Ms. D, or Mr. C, or the ice, or a new shirt, or any of those things. Not even close, in fact. This time, it was Jeannie.
Chapter 54. 3, or more like 7, little words.
"Can I come in?" Jeannie asked.
"Sure,"
I said. I couldn't say no to Jeannie about anything, even if I wanted to. And I didn't want to. I was too busy thinking, "Wow, if this isn't a sign, I don't know what is."
"Rafe, I am so sorry," Jeannie said. "I shouldn't have waved like that. I feel like this was all my fault."
It totally wasn't her fault, of course. It was my own fault. I was the one who couldn't stop staring at her. But try admitting that one out loud. Hopeless.
"Don't worry about it," I told her smoothly.
Oh, right, the toilet paper nose plugs. Not a good look when talking to the girl of your dreams. I turned away for a second and yanked them out, hoping the bleeding had stopped.
"I heard you were doing okay,"
she went on with concern in her voice. "Yeah, I think everyone heard that," I said. Jeannie laughed, which made me laugh, but that hurt my nose, so I stopped. Then she sat down on the edge of the desk. I could tell she didn't want to come too close. But she wasn't leaving either.
"What about you?" I said. "How are you doing?"
"I'm okay," she said. "I guess that means you heard about me and Jared."
"Yeah," I said. I was sitting up now. My nose wasn't dripping blood anymore. That was good, even if it wasn't as romantic as a kiss in the pouring rain or two Shakespearean kids dying in a crypt somewhere.
"So, speaking of all that," I said, "I kind of wanted to talk to you about something kind of important."
"You did?" Jeannie said.
"What?"
Oh, man. Here it comes. Was I really going to do this? Yeah, I really was.
"Really, really?"
"Yeah, really, really." I took a deep breath.
"It's just that you've been so great about the whole report and everything. I really appreciate it," I told her.
"Don't worry about it," Jeannie said. "Well, it's not just that," I said. "It's more like, I just wanted to say, I think if you liked me half as much as I like you, I'd be pretty amazed. I'd be flabbergasted, actually."
"Don't be silly," she said. "I wouldn't be helping you if I didn't like you."
"No," I said. "I mean..." My heart was hammering, and it felt like breathing had just gotten twice as hard. But I couldn't back out now. It was like sitting on a roller coaster right after it takes off, when you know there's nothing you can do to stop it, even if you wanted to. But you're still scared out of your skull. So I just went with it. "What I mean is," I told her, "I think I kind of, love you."
So it wasn't exactly what I meant to say. But it wasn't exactly a lie, either.
At least, I don't think it was. I don't really know what love is supposed to feel like. All I know is that when I opened my big fat mouth, those are the words that came out. "I think I kind of love you."
No taking them back now.
2 seconds passed by in silence, but it felt like 2 hours. She eventually had to say something, right? Something that was probably going to change my life forever. Something either really painful or really phenomenal. Something like, "Oh," Jeannie said. "Oh." Which felt like a big fist through my heart. "I guess that was a pretty stupid thing to say," I said in a rush. I didn't know what else to do besides crawl into the corner and wish I could disappear. "No, it wasn't," Jeannie said just as quickly. "It's just, I didn't mean for you to think, I mean, I didn't break up with Jared because, I mean, I didn't come in here to..." Just then the door opened again, and Mr. Covington came flying in. A bag of ice dropped out of his hand, slid across the floor, and landed under my chair. But he didn't seem to notice. "Excuse me, young lady," he said, taking Jeannie by the arm. "I'm sorry," she said, getting on her feet. "I know I'm not supposed to be in here." "No, it's not that," he said. "It's that." And he pointed down at the desk, where the PA system was, with the microphone. And the talk button. The one Jeannie had been sitting on until just a second ago. Jeannie's eyes got huge. "You mean," she said. Mr. Covington kind of sighed, with an expression like he felt sorry for us both. "I'm afraid so," he said. I could see some people out in the hall now. They were looking into the room and whispering to each other. Some of them were laughing, too. Not in the good way. And that's when I started thinking about maybe it was time for me to leave that school ASAP. And London. And England. And planet Earth, too, if I had anything to say about it. Chapter 55. Friends, I guess. Mr. Covington gave me the ice for my nose and a Beeling Bright secondary school t-shirt to wear. Then he kind of backed out the door and said he'd give us a moment. Jeannie was really nice about the whole thing after that. Of course. And it helped. Some. But I still felt like I'd made the biggest bonehead move of my life. Which is saying a lot, for me.
"I'm sorry, Rafe," Jeannie said awkwardly.
She paused and then continued.
"Well, I bet you'll have a girlfriend soon anyway. I know Sabra and Katrina both think you're cute."
"Sure, in a dorky way," I said.
"You don't know that," she said.
"Actually, I do," I said. Now it sounded like I was feeling sorry for myself. "Don't worry about it," I said.
"Well, please don't take it personally, Rafe. I mean, I just broke up with Jared," she said.
"Yeah, but still, you're not saying there might be a chance," I said, weakly smiling to make her feel a little better. "Or are you?"
"Well, no," she told me. "I guess not."
"That's okay," I said. Jeannie's always told me the truth about everything. I wasn't going to hold this one against her, even if it did feel like my heart had just taken its own soccer ball to the face.
"So, I hope it's okay to ask this," Jeannie said. "But is there any chance you'd want to be friends now? Like, for real?"
"Seriously?" I said.
"Yeah," Jeannie said. "We really do make a good team, Rafe. Just not, you know, like that."
I didn't know what I wanted just then. I mean, I know guys and girls can be friends, no problem. But what about a guy who just told a girl, "I think I kind of love you," while the whole world listened in? Can they be friends? Maybe not. But I guess I was going to find out. Because like I said before, I couldn't say no to Jeannie about anything. Including this. But I did have one other question. "What about Jared?" I said. "He knows everything. Isn't he going to tell Mrs. Stricker about the whole secret partner thing?" Jeannie shook her head.
"To tell you the truth, I don't think he wants to make me any madder than he did yesterday," she said.
Then she stuck out her hand.
So anyway, friends?
Sure, I said.
And we shook on it. Again. Chapter 56. Showdown in Room 568. I guess I could tell you about how much everyone stared at me when I came out of that office, and how much they talked about me on the bus, and laughed at me all the way back to the hotel. But I'm not going to. I mean, you get the idea, right? If I told you about every single time I got laughed at, you'd be listening to my story into the next century. So let's just skip to the next part. When we got to the hotel, the chaperones told us all to pack our bags and be down in the lobby at 4 o'clock sharp. It was time to go home. So I was packing, and Miller went to take a shower. There was a knock at the door, so it was on me to go answer. I guess I should have used the peephole or asked who it was, but I didn't think about it. Not until... blam! As soon as I cracked that door, Jared was inside the room. And he was moving in for the kill, too. I could see it in his eyes. He'd heard about everything that had happened at the school that morning.
"You're the reason she broke up with me," he said.
"No, I'm not," I sputtered. The truth was, Jeannie broke up with Jared because of Jared. But I wasn't going to tell him that.
"You've been planning this all along," he said. "And now you're going to pay."
I'm not exactly afraid of fighting, but I was afraid of what would happen if I did, starting with Jared's fists and ending with Mrs. Stricker. So I jumped up on the nearest bed to get out of the way, then down to the other side.
"Stop running and take it," Jared said.
He came around, but I jumped back up on the mattress and, boing, straight over to the next bed. Jared dove and tried to cut me off. I jumped back the other way, and then down onto the floor by the window. When he came at me again, I jumped up, across, over, and down again, like some kind of crazed kangaroo.
"Quit it," he said.
"You first," I said. He made a grab for me again, and I jumped to the far bed. It was getting beyond stupid, right up until...
"What's going on out here?" Miller yelled,
with a towel around his waist. Jared stopped cold. I did, too. It was like some weird game of freeze tag, but with way higher stakes.
"No offense, Miller," Jared said, "but mind your own business. This is between me and Rafe."
"Yeah, well..." Miller walked out into the middle of the room, with his hair dripping the whole way.
"Now I'm between you and Rafe. Got it?"
"Give me a break," Jared said.
"You've wanted to kick his butt since the beginning of middle school."
"Been there, done that," Miller said.
"Trust me, it's not that hard."
"Gee, thanks," I said.
"Shut up, Rafe," he said. "So, Jared, as I was saying, get out of our room!"
Even though the situation was beyond crazy, I took a sec to appreciate that Miller called it our room. We'd come a long way from him cleaning his toenails with my toothbrush. Anyway, by now Miller was looming so close to Jared that he was dripping water right on top of him. Jared was backing toward the door.
"Whatever," he said.
The thing is, Jared's bigger than me, but Miller's bigger than everyone. It was pretty clear by now that I'd already spilled all the blood I was going to spill that day. I don't know if you can call that a lucky break or not. But what I do know is that Miller the Killer takes the world's fastest showers. I've never been so grateful for someone's bad hygiene in my life. Chapter 57. Home, home on the range. So I made it out of that hotel room alive, and back across the Atlantic Ocean without screwing up again, too. Life is getting back to whatever it's getting back to now. I can't say normal, because my life is never normal. But it's good to be home again. The class trip did cause a few big changes, but for now, you can just put them on the long list of stuff I'll never understand. As for Jared,
It's not exactly over yet. It's more like things are on pause for a few weeks. That's when Miller's leaving town and moving to Phoenix. In the meantime, the kid formerly known as Miller the Killer is now my unofficial bodyguard. How crazy is that? I learned a lot in London, and one of those things is that Miller isn't so bad after all. Not once you get to know him a little, get tortured by him for a few years, and then get to know him a little more. If he weren't moving away, we might have even gotten to be friends, which is something I never, ever, 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 ever thought I'd say. But I guess that's how it goes. When life closes a Miller-sized door, it opens up a Jared-shaped window. Which means I'm getting ready for a whole new kind of battle. So stay tuned on that one, and wish me luck. I think I'm going to need it. Things with me and Jeannie are different now, too. And you might not believe this, but I'm not completely sorry I told her about... you know what. Don't make me say it again. Like, I'm obviously sorry about the PA mic being on at the worst possible time, but things aren't so bad now. See, all that stuff with Jeannie was like this giant weight I'd been holding on to since the very first time I saw her. And even though I basically dropped it on my foot when I put it down, I also don't have to carry it around anymore. And guess what else? Jeannie wasn't kidding when she said we made a good team. We actually put together a whole movie night to show our families and everyone else at school what we did in London. People put up posters and printouts of their mini modules and all the pictures they took, and everyone's parents came to see it. Then we all sat down in the library and watched the videos on a big screen, too. They could have just seen that stuff online, but Jeannie thought it would be cool to have a screening party. Ms. Donatello thought so, too, and helped make it all happen. We had popcorn and drinks, and everyone applauded at the end. And it was cool. Really cool. Especially seeing how much they all liked those videos. I'm not going to say they were mine, exactly, because it really was a group project. But between you and me and Leo the Silent, I think I made a pretty good artist-in-chief. I also made a new friend in London, like Mom said I should try to do. Or maybe it was more like a new friend and a half, if you count what happened with Miller. So it turned out that I followed Mom's advice after all. Just not in the way I ever expected to. Which, I guess, is my new version of normal. Chapter 58. I don't know about honorable, but I'll take the mention. P.S. I know you've been wondering, and the answer is, sort of. We didn't win first place in that living learning contest. There were over 200 entries, and some school from Oregon snagged the win without even leaving the U.S. They did the Grand Canyon. But the good news is, those contest people also gave out 25 honorable mentions. And guess who got one? Hills Village Middle School, that's who. When they sent the letter to the school, it said, "The judging panel was particularly impressed with your creative video additions to the standard report." Yeah, my head swelled up a little bit about that. Just a little, anyway. Not only that, but every honorable mention came with a $100 prize. It was supposed to go into a random drawing, but everyone from our trip voted and gave it to me. If you can believe that. I'm pretty sure it wasn't a unanimous vote. Right, Jared? So, maybe I didn't win $1,000, but I did win $100, which was awesome. Even if it got cut down to $50 after I shared it with Jeannie. And then down to $42.29 when we went to Bosco's to split a pizza and talk about what our next project is going to be. I'm thinking giant blockbuster action film. She's thinking of expanding the online school newspaper, with more articles and arts and videos. We haven't exactly decided yet. But if we ever do start cranking out huge, mega-successful movies, then I know exactly what our company's going to be called. Because like I said before, Jeannie has the brains, and I have the creativity. She's got the friends to help out, and I've got a few more friends than I had before. She has good ideas spilling out of her brain, and I have a few leaking out of mine. So watch out, world. We're just getting started here. You haven't seen anything yet. Two-Headed Monster Productions. Middle School, From Hero to Zero. Written by James Patterson and Chris Tebbets. Read by Michael Crouch. Produced by Tommy Heron. Post-production by Gabino Reyes. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by James Patterson. Audio production copyright 2018 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.